Today's session is sponsored by the Pacific ADA Center and the Great Lakes Center, both of which are members of the ADA National Network. Before we begin, a couple of housekeeping notices. First of all, we will be doing some last-minute sound checks. I think this will be it. So if you are having trouble with your sound system, please go up to your Tools menu, select Audio, and run the Audio Setup Wizard. That should take care of most issues. The webinar is being captioned in real time, and you can turn on your captioning by clicking on the CC icon at the top of your screen. A little window will pop up with the captioning in that. Throughout the session, you are welcome to submit questions, which you may do by typing your question into the chat box, which is to the left of your screen. We will also have a general question and answer period at the end of the session, so if you do want to wait until the end, please feel free to put your questions in at that stage too. We are recording this session, and after the webinar, give us a few days, and a link to the session will be put up on our archive so that you can access that at your leisure after the webinar. Okay, so at this stage it is my pleasure to introduce you to our speaker for today, Jutta Trivaranis, who is the director of the Inclusive Design Research Center, the IDRC, and is a professor in the Faculty of Design at the OCAD University in Toronto. The IDRC is an internationally recognized center of expertise in the inclusive design of emerging information and communication technology and practices. And Jutta is also the co-director of Raising the Floor and GPII. Jutta and her team have pioneered personalization as an approach to accessibility in the digital domain. And she has played a leading role in developing accessibility legislation, standards, and specifications internationally. She is the chair of the W3C WAI Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines Working Group. Bit of a mouthful, but basically what that is the World Wide Web Consortium and the Web Accessibility Initiative. And for those of you who have been involved in watching the legislation and the development of the accessibility guidelines, you'll know that W3C is a very important player in that particular market. So Jutta comes with some wonderful credentials. And today she's really going to help us out in really looking at how we can best use web authoring tools to make them as accessible as possible. And I'm going to leave her to explain that to you. So without further ado, Jutta, please carry on, and thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you, Judith. And as Judith said, I'm happy to accept questions in the chat window, and I'll try to keep an eye on that. I'll also try to keep out of the acronym soup, apologies for the way, W3C, etc. And I'm going to remember to change the slides. So what I'd like to talk to you about is my hope that we can develop strategies whereby we can have thoughtless, careless, habitual, accessible web authoring, because I think in order for everyone to be able to participate in this wonderful thing that is the web that undergirds so many of the things that we do on a daily basis, this is what we are going to need. And why do we need this? Almost anyone can and is creating a website. We have over 900 million Facebook users. There are approximately 30 billion apps downloaded in 2011 alone, and of course that has increased exponentially. There are pets with websites. If you look at the article in Time magazine, you were named as the recipient of the Time magazine honor in 2011, because everyone is participating in creating this knowledge web that is on the web. At the same time, we have a growing amount of digital exclusion. Access to websites, while they're no longer an option, they've become the new entranceway to government, services, commerce, education, employment, recreation, social engagement, civic engagement. almost everything we do has some online or web component. It's impossible to get a job, to participate in education, to purchase many products, to socialize without touching the web or without access to the web. And recent studies in the U.S. show that digital exclusion within the U.S. costs approximately $55.2 billion annually. So participating in the web is and getting access to the web is definitely no longer an option. But web accessibility, don't we have WCAG? And here is one of those acronyms. This is the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And most of you will be familiar with this because the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines are, and especially 2.0, the most recent version, is enshrined in legislation in more than 40 jurisdictions around the world. It's reflected in legislation in the US called Section 508. Both the old 508 and the 508 refresh, which governs procurement within government and requires that all of the producers and suppliers follow the web accessibility guidelines. There are hundreds of courses and training programs in how to create accessible web content and how to comply to web content accessibility guidelines. And there are also many, many checking tools out there. And the amount of effort, I mean, just Googling the WCAG or Googling W3C Way WCAG will show you how many sites are devoted to attempting to teach people how to use WCAG, advocating for compliance to WCAG, and giving tools to check whether you do comply to WCAG, or providing certification that for WCAG compliance. So why is this not enough to ensure that the web is accessible? One of the things that we've found is that most governments, although they have rules and laws about web accessibility requirements, are breaking their own laws. A recent UNESCO and UN study shows that counter to what you would think, the compliance to WCAG 2.0 globally has not improved and is in fact not very good, the performance of even government sites is not very good at the moment. There is little progress over the last few years, so the number of courses, the number of amount of legislation, the amount of lawsuits or litigation that occurs is not resulting in greater compliance to WCAG 2.0. It's in fact even seen as an impediment to innovation. So there's many tweets and much that is going on in forums where people are complaining that the web content requirements are stopping the use of new technologies, further exploration of more rich and engaging internet access. But even with that discourse, any discussion is good, but unfortunately most authors, when we've done surveys, are not aware of web content accessibility guidelines. Many are not motivated to comply, and many find it very hard to understand. It's often much easier to write a website or to create a website than it is to comply to web content accessibility guidelines. When we started this entire process, this thinking about web accessibility and worrying about web accessibility, there were very, very few authors. And all of the authors were technically knowledgeable. You had to be in order to create a website. This has, of course, changed dramatically. The instructions that you provided for how to make a website accessible were also fairly unambiguous and clear and easy to follow. So that in the intervening years, everything has changed. There are many, many more authors. The technology is much more complex. The guidance that needs to be provided has become much more complex. And in recently surveying technologies, even things with sensors and other technologies that are out there, even things like the weather can create a new website or generate a new website. Apologies, I note the volume. I will turn up my volume. Is this better? Okay, great. Apologies about that. So, do you think I should repeat some of what has been said, or is it safe to go on? Great, okay. So, given the situation, what are we to do? One of the primary things that we're pinning our hopes on in terms of addressing this issue of digital exclusion and the lack of compliance with web content accessibility guidelines is the fact that everyone out there, almost all authors, are using authoring tools or development toolkits. Almost no one is starting from scratch, doing HTML or JavaScript from scratch. Whether people are using convert to HTML functions with their word processor, using learning content management systems to create curriculum, whether you're using a wiki or a blog, whether you're using a social networking tool, a cloud-based application, or software development toolkits, all of these are authoring tools, and they're a mechanism to create content, and so they provide an opportunity to intervene and to ensure that the content that is provided through them is accessible. And for this purpose, what we've created is something called the Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines. And these guidelines have two primary purposes. The first is one that we should never forget, and that is an extremely important one, and that is ensuring that authoring tools are accessible to authors with disabilities. If we focus only on the web content accessibility guidelines, we are almost saying that people with disabilities who require alternative access systems only need to be consumers of information. And that might have been, or probably wasn't even acceptable back when production of web content was reserved for few people. Now that web authoring is so ubiquitous that communicating on the web is very much a two-way process, we have to recognize that people with disabilities must be producers, not just consumers of web content. For equal participation, the authoring tools need to accommodate the needs of individuals who require alternative access systems. The second piece of the authoring tool accessibility guidelines is supporting the creation of accessible web content. And so what we're recognizing here is that web authors may not know or care about WCAG, and we need another mechanism. We need a more ubiquitous, easier to understand, easier to implement method of ensuring that authors create accessible content. ATAG is part of the World Wide Web Consortium Web Accessibility Initiative model, what I have on this slide is a diagram that shows the entire system. At the one end you have the developers, in the middle you have the content, and at the other end you have the users. And what needs to happen in that communication process is we need to support the developers in authoring accessible content, evaluating that it is accessible, and then we need to support users in using browsers that are accessible, and ensuring that those browsers and the content are compatible with the assistive technologies. So there's three primary guidelines within the W3C Way model, and that the first are the web content accessibility guidelines, those guidelines that are enshrined in most legislation at the moment, which are guidelines for making web content more accessible. All those rules and success criteria and guidance in how is it that we can author content or that content can be authored in such a way that it is accessible. Then secondly are the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. And these are in draft for the second version, but are a recommendation for the first version. They're guidelines for making authoring tools more accessible to authors and supporting the production of accessible content by all authors. And these are this is the subject of this particular webinar. The third component is the user agent accessibility guidelines. And these are how do you make browsers and players and all of those things you use to deliver the content accessible. And these are an important piece for ensuring that individuals with disabilities or alternative access systems can actually consume the content that is provided. So talking a little bit more about the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. As I said, it's version 1 was published in 1999 and is a current recommendation. Version 2.0 is nearing completion. And the ATAG 2.0 applies to all of the authoring tools that are out there, whether they're WYSIWYG editors, and here's another acronym soup that means what you see is what you get editors, plain text editors, conversion tools such as save as HTML within your Word processor, blogging tools, wikis, online forums, email clients, multimedia authoring systems, video editors, content management systems, anything and everything that you use to create content that will be shared on the web. And how do we define those things called authoring tools? It's defined as any web-based or non-web-based application that can be used by authors alone or collaboratively to create or modify web content for use by other people, including other authors or end users. And so the authoring tool guidelines apply to all of these tools. And the audience for these are the developers of those tools. And ATAG, or authoring tool accessibility guidelines 2.0, supports the web content accessibility guidelines. The authoring tool accessibility guidelines uses the web content accessibility guidelines as the determinant of web content accessibility. So it is providing the necessary guidance to developers of authoring tools in how to ensure that their authoring tools produce content that is web content accessibility guidelines compliant or follows legislation in many jurisdictions. It has also special checkpoints that create relative guidance. So depending upon the importance that specific strategies or techniques are given in the web content accessibility guidelines, the ATAG or the authoring tool accessibility guidelines inherit the same weighting. So stepping quickly through what is in these authoring tool accessibility guidelines, the first part of it, and of course the most important part, or as many people would say, the more important part is making sure that anyone can author content. And logically, part of this is make the authoring tool user interface accessible. And here, what the authoring tool accessibility guidelines do is reference the platform-specific guidance on accessibility. Because, of course, authoring tools exist on mobile devices, they exist on various, even on cell phones and feature phones, they exist on desktops, they can be apps, they can be full desktop applications, they can be collaborative tools, and so many of those platforms also have existing accessibility guidelines. And the authoring tool accessibility guidelines reference those. The remainder of the guidance follows the web content accessibility guidelines. So those of you that are familiar with web content accessibility guidelines will recognize some of these principles. The first principle is that the editing views must be perceivable. And this is for individuals that are using screen readers or alternative systems that require information in various formats. they need to also be able to access the editing windows to create the content. And so for that reason, those editing views need to be made accessible. The editing views also need to be operable, so especially for someone who requires alternative keyboard access or cannot control a mouse or cannot see a mouse pointer, all of the traditional things that we know about how to ensure that someone can control an interface need to be followed in the authoring tools. They must be understandable, so for someone that has difficulty with cognitive access, the authoring tool needs to be able to be forgiving of mistakes, needs to have guidance in how to use it, understandable guidance, so that individuals with cognitive access issues can still author or can author content as well. The second part of the authoring tool accessibility guidelines is the guidance that allows for that careless, have habitual, integrated, proactive production of accessible content. And the reason why this is, I think, a very, very powerful tool in ensuring that we address digital exclusion is that we really can't rely on the average author to implement the web content accessibility guidelines on their own. And this is, as I've alluded to earlier, because accessibility guideline our requirements have become much more complex and very complex to manage as websites become more complex and multi-layered and integrating multiple technologies and frequently created as mashups. Most authors are not, nor do they wish to be accessibility experts. And WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, is a very technical document. It's on par with a lot of technical instruction that goes well beyond the requirements or the technical requirements of actually authoring a website, especially if you're using things like social networking tools or other tools. The delivery as well of web content is becoming more complex. We no longer have just flat HTML pages that are uploaded onto a site. The website can be constructed from many, many different sources, and so it's very difficult to enforce web content accessibility guidelines when you're not sure who the author is or who is responsible for what part of a website. And the tools that are being used to create web content frequently hide many of the low-level details of the final content, as where the web content accessibility guidelines give guidance with respect to those low-level or technical details. And so it becomes difficult for an author who has full intention of following web content accessibility guidelines to check on that and to ensure that they do that. Frequently it requires opening up and doing things to the authoring tool that go well beyond what you would expect a standard user of an authoring tool to do. So the second part of the authoring tool accessibility guidelines guide the author or guide the developer of an authoring tool in creating an authoring tool that will produce accessible content. The first part of it, the principle B1, refers to all of the things that authoring tools do automatically. Authoring tools are becoming easier and easier to use by virtue of doing things for authors without the author's knowledge frequently or without the author's intervention. And so the first logical requirement is that the authoring tool, if it's doing anything, if it's making choices for the authors or if it's doing some automatic process in the background, that has to be accessible. The second principle is that authors must be supported in producing accessible content. So this is the cajoling, guiding, prompting, suggesting, educating as the author moves through the process of authoring content. The idea is that whether the author knows about web content accessibility guidelines or even is motivated, they're going to be cajoled, prompted, supported, guided in the direction of creating accessible content. So the first off, of course, creating accessible content has to be possible. And unfortunately, there are still many authoring tools out there where even if you tried, even if you knew all about web content accessibility guidelines, you wouldn't be able to produce accessible content using them. And so this is a fairly critical and important guideline within ATAG. The next is that you guide authors towards the more accessible content. So if there are choices where taking one direction or making one choice with the authoring tool will produce accessible content and taking another direction will produce inaccessible content, you're guided towards the more accessible content. One, of course, very critical part of making sure that content is accessible to everyone is providing alternative content for non-text content. So images, graphics, making sure that there is a description of it, a textual description that someone with a screen reader can determine what information is being provided by that image or graphic or other visual element, or if it's an audio element, the captions that are needed to ensure that someone who is not able to hear the audio can get the same information. And so an important guideline within ATAG is that authors have to be assisted in managing alternative content for non-text content. Another critically important piece is templates. If an authoring tool provides templates that can be reused and that can be used to fill in the information and that provide much of the markup, then that markup within the templates or the way that the templates are authored should be accessible. And similarly, if there is, say, an image library or a set of components or pieces that can be used by the authoring or by the author when using the authoring tool, then those should be provided in an accessible form so the author doesn't have to modify them to make them accessible. The next thing, and the reason why this particular principle is second, not first, is that one of the benefits of having authoring tool accessibility guidelines is that the accessible authoring can be a proactive process. You can author accessibly right from the beginning, so you don't have to fix things, you don't have to retrofit, you don't have to take the time that it takes to go back and fix things, because that often is much less efficient. So the third principle in this part of the authoring tool accessibility guidelines is that the author should be assisted in checking for accessibility problems and repairing those accessibility problems. And repair is also a fairly critical thing, because it's not enough to know that there's a problem, but being supported in fixing the problems that are there have been seen to be much more effective in ensuring that the content is accessible and continues to be accessible. And the next principle is that the authoring tool must promote and integrate their accessibility features. There have been authoring tools that comply to the authoring tool accessibility guidelines, but the support for accessible authoring looks like it's been tagged on at the end. It's not supported as much. It doesn't look as pretty. It looks like just something that's stuck in there because of it's a requirement. And so there is a guideline within the authoring tool accessibility guidelines that says that you have to ensure that the accessibility features, those things that support accessible authoring, are available throughout the process, are just as prominent, look just as nice, are just as enticing, and are part of the default path that you would go through as you're using an authoring tool. So basically what the authoring tool accessibility guidelines are trying to promote is that the authoring tools need to support accessibility in the same way as they support things like correct syntax and spelling. Those are fairly natural processes, and as you're authoring, if there's a spelling mistake, then you see immediately that it's a spelling mistake, and you can correct it as you're going along. similarly, we're hoping that authoring tools, and many of them do at them already, support this sort of natural integration of accessibility so that you don't have to go through a separate, segregated, after the fact exercise of fixing any accessibility problems. You're reminded, you're prompted right as you are authoring the content. And we want it to be part also of any of the processes. So the image that I'm showing now in a graphic is something that is available for iPhone app developers. The prompting for things like alt text or the necessary accessibility components are naturally integrated into the dialogue for markup and other things, so that you don't have to go somewhere else to find out how to make something accessible. Similarly, there are many good examples of integrated accessibility checking and repair, where the dialogues that you need to use anyways in creating the content that you hope to create include the accessibility prompts and the accessibility guidance and information and help buttons that take you to further information about how to make these things accessible. One of the nice things about authoring tools, not everybody encounters web content accessibility guidelines. No matter how far and wide we broadcast it, no matter how many sets of guidelines we send out, no matter how many emails, no matter how many webinars we give, not every author is going to see or read or pay attention to web content accessibility guidelines. But because almost every author uses an authoring tool, if those few developers of authoring tools are made aware of and required to create accessible authoring tools, then that's a very powerful means of educating authors in how to create accessible content. We can slip into the help file, slip into the dialog boxes, information about why it's important to include alt text, or why it's important to include structure, or why captions are needed, or what the additional benefits of captions are in terms of indexing the audio content or the video content. So it becomes, these authoring tools become very, very powerful education tools as well. On the topic of integration, it's also important at a macro level. We need to ensure within our organization that we integrate accessible authoring practices into the organizational workflow. Accessibility should become a routine and integrated part of any of the processes we have within the organization that produce content for the web or interactions for the web. This includes making sure that the tools that we use within an organization follow the authoring tool accessibility guidelines and support accessible authoring. It should be part of the design and development from the start, not just a quality assurance gate to pass through. One of the things we've found with many organizations, or when we've done studies in looking at web content accessibility compliance, is that it's viewed as a obligation that people would like to avoid, because it does, when it's used as a gatekeeping mechanism, it frequently comes in just before the deadline. It's another thing to worry about. And in some cases, we found that people spend more time trying to figure out how they can be exempt from the process than how they can comply to the process. Within an organization, therefore, it's good to integrate the accessible authoring processes right from the beginning and right throughout the workflow, and to make sure that accessibility features are enabled by default in the tools that are provided. It should also be part of the procurement requirements. So when tools are being bought, content management systems, when someone's creating a template for you, accessible authoring practices should be part of it. And sorry. I think I. this then ensures that it's the accessibility is an efficient thing. It ensures that we have reuse of accessible components. So if your image library, institutional logo, prescribed navigation bar, and all of those integrate accessibility from the start, then you're not going to have to repeat accessible processes. I can't stress accessible templates enough, and also accessible content management systems. Within content management, a lot of the redundant work is done by the organization so that each author that adds content doesn't need to do it again. If we ensure that, that what is added by the organization is accessible, then we save time and energy. And of course, here is an example of an accessible template. If we do the template right once, then it stays right, and the authors that add content to it don't need to worry about following web content accessibility guidelines because they've been followed in the template. In terms of procurement, there's procurement and there's procurement. I've seen very many procurement orders where there's just a single line added and no one really checks to see whether the bid has the right stuff or whether in fact the checkoff box is accurate. So it's highly important to make to provide the vendors with detailed accessibility criteria rather than allowing general high-level statements about adhering to accessibility requirements. And it's also good to state clearly that any false accessibility claim is going to be dealt with seriously. And lastly, it's good to have knowledgeable staff verify as many of the accessibility claims made by the vendors as is practically possible, and even to bring in experts to make sure that what you're purchasing actually does comply with accessibility requirements. So a single piece of content, if you're procuring it, only affects that single piece of content. If you're procuring a authoring tool that supports accessible authoring or a template that supports accessible authoring, the effect of it is going to multiply. And so the importance of ensuring that that particular tool or that particular template is in fact following the guidelines regarding accessible authoring is even more important. Okay, actually I'm going to take a quick break and ask if there's any questions. I've gone through a lot of content so far. Does anyone require clarification in what I've said so far?
Yes, so this is Judith. I actually was interested in your comments about how you're actually promoting the HAA guidance, and you talk about cajoling and guiding people along the way. Is W3C involved in actually doing that kind of promotion, or do you just do it passively and hope that people will find you on the way? But you know, how do you promote this whole concept?
Yeah. That's a great question. So W3, of course, is promoting the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. And Judy Brewer is extremely active. And if you look at most of her talks and most of her advocacy recently, it's frequently and mentions authoring tool accessibility guidelines. What the audience for the ATAG or the authoring tool accessibility guidelines is very different from the audience for the web content accessibility guidelines. It's the developers, the companies, the large companies that are creating the authoring tools. And so the type of advocacy and the type of audience is very different. And I think partly that's why you haven't heard about authoring tool accessibility guidelines as much. Because with web content accessibility guidelines, we need to reach out to each and every author, and each and every author needs to understand them. That means that it's a fairly large sort of populist message. But the A tag is potentially much more powerful and is a very critical and important accompaniment to the web content accessibility guidelines. So I think we haven't done enough to promote them, certainly not in legislative forums. Also, the groups that we are advocating to, which are the authoring tool developers, are a very different audience. And so the type of influence that's required there is very different from spreading the word about the good you can do by making sure you adhere to web content accessibility guidelines. But I invite and welcome anyone that is working in policy or is working in digital inclusion advocacy to promote the use of authoring tools. I think one very, very powerful way to do that is in including it in your procurement documents. So if anyone has any influence, in, especially in large organizations, in procuring authoring tools, then putting a line in there that they should be ATAG compliant would be very, very helpful. Okay, I'm just, there's a question. Oh, so the question is, would I be willing to share verbiage that would be included in procurement policy? And definitely, I can provide a number of templates and clauses that have been included in procurement statements with you. And Debbie Jackson asks, which web authoring tool would you recommend that incorporates the authoring tool accessibility guidelines? And that's a fairly difficult question. There are so many different types of web content and authoring tools, whether it's for mobile apps or whether it's for just things like Dreamweaver or integrated into word processors. We have up on the World Wide Web Consortium Web Accessibility Initiative site guidelines on what the tools are doing in terms of authoring tool accessibility guidelines compliance and examples of what is being done. So depending upon the type of a content you want to author, you would pick from that set of tools and compare amongst the tools to see which are incorporating the necessary and important pieces of the authoring support that you need. And Casey Wood asked, so the in slide 18 to 20, let me just go, what software or tools are being used to create the prompts shown? So I've shown a few different tools there. I did show Adobe Acrobat. I showed the iPhone Developer Toolkit. I showed Microsoft Windows Word prompting system. So I've shown a number of different tools as I've been going through the slides. But I can, as I said, on the World Wide Web Consortium site, ATAG site, both in the techniques and in the group page, there are pointers to the different tools and the types of authoring supports that they provide. And then Patrick asked, does section B3.1 include provisions for previewing with screen reader high contrast, just as it is currently possible to preview in various browser windows? So this isn't specifically a requirement, although the editing view does need to be accessible to screen readers. And there's within so B3.1 is specific to the checking and those types of supports. So it isn't actually a requirement within it, but it is part of the techniques. And if you look at the B3 technique, accompanying techniques to the guidelines, there are a number of possible techniques, and the A part of the ATAG guidelines do ensure that the preview and the editing views are accessible to screen readers. And then in the second part B, which is providing the appropriate supports for creating accessible content, there are a number of techniques that are recommended to the developers that can help authors, as they're creating content, visualize what it would look like within a screen reader or within other forms of alternative access systems, although this isn't explicitly a requirement. Okay, oh, and thank you, Judith, for putting up the URL. Okay, so then I will, given the time, I will quickly go through the rest of the presentation, and thank you for those questions. And I'll address more questions at the end as well, because I think given the questions that you've asked, there are many ways in which you can help in promoting and ensuring that the authoring tools are out there, and the authoring tools that support accessible authoring are out there. So authoring content isn't just static stuff. When I said at the beginning that the web has changed, the web is also now on multiple platforms. It's on mobile devices. It's even in your appliances. It can be on your, for example, here in one of the apartments that are simulations. For part of our labs, there are stoves and fridges that have web viewers on them. So the web is everywhere. It is far more interactive. It involves far more than HTML, and it's changed dramatically since 98, when the first web content accessibility guidelines came out, and when we started this whole web accessibility effort. So what one of the other very, very critical and important things that can be used are development tools that support accessibility. So these include component libraries, toolkits, design pattern libraries for creating interactive applets, scripts, mobile apps, rich internet applications, interactive components or interactive things that require Ajax, JavaScript, and those sorts of things. The parts of the web that engage and involve interaction. And the critical piece here is that what we want to do is provide building blocks that integrate accessible styling, enable full keyboard access, are screen reader compatible, include what are called and here's another acronym soup, ARIA, Accessible Rich Internet Application Markup. And this is semantic markup that is used to ensure that those interactive components that look much more like applications or desktop applications than they look like HTML or web content are in fact understandable and controllable by alternative access systems. We want to make sure that the building blocks are reusable, that they provide these flexible, accessible chunks of functionality. And one example that I'm going to be discussing is the Fluid project, which is trying to do just that. So the part of the Fluid project that, and this is a large open source community with many, many developers all around the world working on providing these types of building blocks. The part that is available for web developers or mobile app developers or application developers, if you're creating an application for, say, a smartphone or an iPad, if you're developing something where you have secure login or where you manage identity, certainly all of those those types of applications that provide things like government services online or shopping online, all of those usually use some form of rich internet application. So the piece of fluid that supports this is called fluid infusion. And fluid infusion provides very flexible markup that ensures that you're free to change the component designs as you see fit without worrying about breaking JavaScript code. So it'll one set of apps that use fluid infusion are not can be completely different and unrecognizable from the next. So it doesn't impose any particular look or feel or behavior. It just makes sure that the underlying stuff is accessible and you can modify it and customize it and make it your own and add your own branding without breaking the accessibility pieces of it. It uses a fairly powerful event system to notify your code when something has happened so that you can create highly interactive applications and applets and behaviors. Unlike other toolkits, and there are many, many different toolkits out there for creating apps and for creating rich internet applications, the fluid infusion components do not give you any black boxes. With some content management systems and with some toolkits, there's certain things you can modify and then there's others that you can't modify. So everything in this particular toolbox is designed to be modified, reworked, and adapted to suit your own needs. It's ideal for portals, mashups, content management systems. It's for those of you who are technically inclined, it's fully namespace, and it works very well with other codes, so you don't have to stick to a particular code base. You can add the necessary pieces that you need for accessibility. And it's fairly lightweight, so it doesn't add a lot of stuff to you, the bandwidth that's required to disseminate your applications. And it provides a cascading style sheet library to help you quickly flesh out your layouts and create your own distinctive design. There's a okay, I'll answer Cliff's question towards the end. And what I'm showing now is a screenshot of the Fluid website where you can download free of charge and the Fluid Infusion components. The byline for the community is designing software that works for everyone. And more importantly than using the stuff, we're hoping that any one of you that is interested in developing applets will also participate in the community, and that as you use the components, you'll give back any sort of innovations or changes that you make to the components. Although Fluid is licensed as an open license, and so you need not give back. You can, in fact, create a version of Fluid and commercialize it yourself and include it in non-open source applications as well. The next slide I'm showing is a number of the types of components that are part of the Fluid Toolkit. And these components have been checked into and have been contributed to other component libraries. So one of the things that the Fluid community has done is to look and see what are the component toolkits, the software development kits that most developers are using, and when they allow for contribution of additional components, Fluid has contributed these components to these communities and ensured that they work well and play nice with the other components in those toolkits. What the Fluid community has focused on are all those really gnarly, difficult to manage, difficult to do accessibility problems. Those things that designers that are not familiar with accessibility or the needs of someone who's using an alternative access system would get stumped on. It includes things like How do you drag and drop if you can't see a mouse cursor? How do you reorder images if you can't see the images and you're using a screen reader? How do you manage things like, components that require thoughtful design, even if you don't have accessibility issues? Like one of the things that we tried to tackle early on was a date picker, because that was frequently something that was specific to a particular culture or to a certain way or convention of handling dates. And so there are thoughtful designs that are contributed to the Fluid Component Toolkit that address that particular problem. The other thing about this particular toolkit and the other toolkits that it's part of is that it isn't necessarily only thinking about accessibility. They're robust and they're intended to be quality checked and dependable and updated, easily updatable, lightweight, and therefore they're sort of a Trojan horse. And developers that don't even care or have never heard about the need for being accessible will pick up these components because they look nice, they work nice, and they address other issues that they're attempting to address. And in terms of rich internet application development and support for that, for authoring rich internet applications, there are multiple levels of authoring support. One of the other things that's out there is frameworks to allow people to create their own accessible components. So there are component toolkits where you can pick up a component and modify it and use it within your application. But there are also frameworks that allow you to create your own accessible components and put the accessibility support into the framework itself. So the minute you use the framework, you inherit all of the things that are required to make sure that the components are accessible. So one example is, again, the Infusion framework. It's comprised of a number of low-level user interface services intended to make user interface development in JavaScript and dynamic HTML significantly easier. And its services include things like drag and drop support, reusable AJAX connection strategies, DOM, or document object model manipulation, the sort of structural manipulation that you need in order to enable somebody with a screen reader or with an on-screen keyboard to navigate through your content or your applet, keyboard handlers, and many more of the things that you need to do to be sure that the applications and applets that you have for mobile devices or cell phones are accessible and can be used by anyone with an alternative access system. So the framework provides a rich set of APIs or the programming interfaces that are needed by developers. And the framework is built on top of jQuery. jQuery is one of the most popular ways in which people that create applications use to produce those applets and applications and interactive components on the web. It's modular and interoperable, and it's all open, the architecture, the source code, and the community. So as with the components, anyone and everyone is welcome to participate and to help refine. So what I'm hoping is that I've persuaded you that we need integrated, habitual, efficient, easy, accessible web content authoring, and that it needs to be accessible to all potential authors. It's cheaper, it's more efficient, it reaches more people if we have authoring tools that support this type of accessible authoring. And I think the one thing that I'd like to do with this webinar is to recruit your help in spreading the word and in helping to advocate that the authoring tools that we purchase are accessible, that developers of authoring tools provide these types of supports for accessible authoring, because I think that is is the most powerful and the easiest way to ensure that all of the content that's out there is going to be accessible and that we reach all of the potential authors. And I would love to take further questions, thoughts, and suggestions. And I'm going to go now back through the questions that have already been submitted. Cliff says, an increasing number of courts are mandating that persons use web-based filling applications based upon what you have told us today. Someone filling a document with a court is an author. Is it acceptable to have workarounds for the area where the web-based filling system is incompatible to a user who uses a large print or on their monitor, or should the application be compatible with the user who is using one of their computer's accessibility features? So yes, those fillable forms would be seen as authoring tools, and if they follow the authoring tool accessibility guidelines, especially if this is part of a judicial system or a court requirement, they should be following ATAG, and the author that is then and supporting the author or the individual that's filling out those forms in creating accessible content. The definition or sort of what is the authoring tool and what is the authoring content is becoming quite blurry. And as you can probably see from your example, frequently web content is also an authoring tool or is used as an authoring tool. And so it's somewhat circuitous. But the authoring tool accessibility guidelines, if they're followed in any process or in any application or form or template that requires someone to fill in content, then we're going to have, or we're going to ensure that that content is accessible. So whoever is providing those filling systems that are required by the court should follow the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. Lois asked, what are UI services on slide 30? So UI services are user interface services, and they're, and I'm at the risk of getting a little too technical, there are ways of having that interaction. So as you've probably noted, doing things like getting government services online, applying for a new passport, filing your taxes, buying a Amazon book, all of those are can be provided in a number of ways. One of them is as a web service, and there are and those services can be provided on the device, the client device, or on the server, and the Fluid Infusion Toolkit enables those user interface services to be accessible wherever they happen to be provided. So an example would be save feature or submit feature. That could be a UI service. It's a behavior or an interaction that needs to be accessible. Among the things that you need to think about when creating a submit button is that the label for that button is clear, that the text field that you've just filled in, that is where you've just put the information that you're going to submit, that it's clear what that particular text field requires, that there's feedback on what you've entered into there. That the next step is to submit, and so as you navigate through the form, you get to the submit next. So there's all sorts of things to think about when you set up that interaction, and the Infusion Toolkit allows you to author it in such a way that it is done accessibly. And so Patrick Jew asked, how, if at all, is the development of HTML5 standards affecting WCAG and ATAG? It is definitely affecting both WCAG and ATAG. One of the things that happened with the rich internet applications, or the sort of movement towards AJAX and JavaScript and all of those interactive bits, was that there was a lot of disjointed and also proprietary creation of methods of creating that interaction. And so what happened was, rather than there being one particular standard for how you could create, say, an interactive simulation or a curriculum or a game online, there were many. And some of those were proprietary. They required their own special players and viewers. And so accessibility became much more difficult. It became extremely brittle. There were some of these toolkits that even if people spent hours and hours and a lot of human resources in making them or in using the workarounds that were required to make them accessible, the next time there was an upgrade to the player or the viewer, that would break. And so the accessibility attempts with those more proprietary or with that variety of toolkit became very, very brittle and very risky and difficult. HTML5, because it is a standard and because it's depending upon standard conventions, browsers, doesn't require extra players. Am I still on? Because I just had a...
line.
Okay, I just had a dialogue coming up saying that the teleconference has been disconnected. Apologies for that. I'm back. Am I?
Go ahead, Jessa.
Okay, great. So the question was HTML5. HTML5 provides a standard for all of those things that have become somewhat disjointed and disparate and brittle out there. So it is now possible to make simulations, to create games, to create videos that follow that follow accessibility guidelines. Because we have one standard, accessibility becomes much easier again, or as easy, hopefully, as the original HTML5 guidelines that were out there. So if you are still creating games or simulations or curriculum with proprietary formats, I would encourage you to investigate the use of HTML5 and move towards HTML5, especially given the recent actions or movements by some of the mobile device developers. If you want to be available on every platform, then moving to HTML5 is a much safer way to go.
Great, thanks, Jutta. I had a question. This is Judith again. We're noticing, especially I am a PC user rather than a Mac user, but I'm watching the development of Windows 8 out fairly soon and all of the wonderful things that they're promoting, which is really going to be looking at interactivity and cross-platform activity as well. And one of the things which they really are pushing is the ease of creating content, as you say, the save to HTML or the creating PDFs directly from Word and so on. So there's an enormous amount of work that needs to be done and also a lot of areas that could potentially cause problems. How would be the best way either for your group or for us as users to interact with someone like those major platforms to really insist that these interactive elements are accessible as possible? It just seems like there's a great opportunity for good stuff, but also an equally great opportunity for inaccessibility to come into the party as well.
Yes, definitely. And thank you for mentioning this. So Microsoft is a active member of the Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines Working Group. And I think one of the ways everyone can help is to advocate and request that those powerful tools do comply with the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. We are coming into candidate recommendation, and certainly there are a number of potential designs that are being submitted as implementation examples for the guidelines that are coming from that specific set of tools. And so not just to sort of bug Microsoft or to, but also to provide support to those within Microsoft that are advocating for support for accessible authoring. It would be good to through whatever mechanism you have, to request that the tools support accessibility, to support any accessible authoring practices that are within the tool, and to make it loud and clear that these are of value and that we would like to see them, or we would like to see those types of supports, and those are important to us. The same goes for the other large platform developers that are on the working group, but also the ones that are not on the working group. If you have any point of contact, or even if you don't, you could establish it to make it loud and clear to the developers that we want ATAC compliance in the tools and we want this accessibility support. As you say, there are many different tools that are now including authoring, including web content just that is supporting authoring. So another really critical area, given the proliferation of things like of the various social networking tools, is to ask that those social networking tools support accessible authoring, because it, although, I mean, some people have said that they don't provide critical things like government services, etc., that certainly socialization and being able to be part of a social network is a fairly critical and important function as well.
Great, thank you. Do we have any additional questions? If you do have some questions, please, this would be a good time to enter them into the e-chat area. We are coming to the end, so if you have a last one or two questions, that would be wonderful to finish off. I guess my last question would be if you could just reiterate of the existing tools that you know of. Obviously, your Infusion is your tools are the ones that you're promoting at this stage. Do you have that you would recommend that are good of the ones that are out there that people might be familiar with that you'd recommend? And how would one go about actually identifying a good authoring tool if you don't really know where to start?
Right. So just to be clear, I was mentioning Fluid Infusion because it's an area that the web applet and web app and development environment tools are not that well known. So the Fluid Infusion is one example, and we're hoping that people will take the example of Fluid Infusion. And so if you're doing any development of toolkits, SDKs, or software development toolkits or component libraries, that you look to the Fluid Infusion as a potential example, and you steal the ideas that are from there, and so that they proliferate throughout all of the other development toolkits. In terms of just standard web content, so not applet or rich internet application, just plain vanilla authoring your own website stuff, there are a variety of tools that are available that support it. The ones that were mentioned include some of the Microsoft tools, so including the word processors where you have convert to HTML. Certainly the latest versions of that are far more supportive of accessible authoring and do preserve the accessible structure once it is converted. They include some of the content management systems. So certainly content management systems such as Drupal and WordPress and others are beginning to integrate the authoring tool accessibility guidelines. The full list of which tools implement what and which tools are best to use for accessible authoring of what kind of content are up on the W3C site. And I'm adverse to sort of recommending any one because the situation is changing all the time, and it completely depends upon the type of content that you're creating and the types of interactions that you want to create or the form of the web content that you're creating. But I would encourage you to visit the site and take a look, and if you have a specific type of content or if you are embarking upon a certain authoring task, feel free to contact us and we'll give you a listing of potential tools that would be good for creating accessible authoring for those purposes.
Great, thank you very much. And I have put that link back up to the WAI Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines Working Group in the chat room for those who would like to get there directly from there. It looks like we have one last question from Christopher Dobson. Are there state government institutions and developers currently participating in the FLUID project?
There are some developers from state government institutions, yes. In fact, FLUID's quite an interesting community. There are people participating from all around the world and contributing back quite significantly. So it's a ever-growing community of people, and there are some state government institutions that are, this would be the developers within state government that are using the FLUID toolkit and then doing things like filing bugs or asking for recommendations. It's run as an open source community, and so anyone and everyone can participate, and anyone and everyone contributes to the priority setting the roadmap, determining what is going to be done next, and figuring out what components need to be developed next. But it would be good to have further participation. It would also be good to have further government participation in the Authoring Tool Accessibility Guidelines Working Group. Actually, anyone that is interested in participating, especially as we move towards candidate recommendation, would be welcome. We welcome expertise. We welcome end users. Certainly anyone that is involved in creating or developing authoring tools of any sort is very welcome to join the ATAG working group as well.
Great. That sounds like a real challenge to those of you who are listening to get involved. I think we all tend to be so much more aware of either Section 508 or the WCAG guidelines, and it's really good to have the ATAG guidelines brought into our consciousness as well. So thank you very much for that. It looks like I think we have come to the end of questions at this stage. So I'm sure that you'll all agree that was a very interesting presentation and lots of food for thought. It looks like we're really at the beginning of a lot of work, but a lot of good stuff that's out there. So, Jutta, thank you once again for contributing as much as you have, and we look forward to seeing how we go forward with this whole new area for us of authoring tools. So thank you so much for that, and for everybody who's joined us, we really appreciate your being with us today, and we look forward to seeing you all in our next webinar, which will be coming up in October. So thank you so much, everybody, and I think that concludes that.
And thank you all. I see there are other questions coming up, and I'll answer them in the chat window.
Jutta, go ahead. I'm sorry, I missed those last questions, so please feel free to go ahead, both in the chat or verbally as well. We do time, so not a problem. For those who can stay on, that's great.
Okay, so Mark, the Yes Fluid is addressing touchscreen interfaces, and in fact, we're looking at a number of touch behaviors, and we hoped on the roadmap is one something that's really quite critical, which is that because these are turning up in many museums and public spaces, is multi-user touch systems. So there are multi-user touch tables where you would need one form of interaction or accessibility for one person that's participating at the same time as you need a different set of interactions for someone else. So given that Fluid tries to address the gnarly problem, we've taken on that particular gnarly problem. Oh, great, and thank you, Christopher, for passing this on to the Illinois Web Best Practices Group. Any group that is concerned with accessibility and accessibility, we would love to send you further content to help in that. So, and I think that's the remainder of the questions. Feel free to send me any further questions that you might have, and I'll be sure to answer them.
Thanks again, Yuta. That's great. And I will be in touch with you outside of this to get the some of the verbiage that people were asking for in terms of policy. Would be great that we can send out to all of our attendees as well.
Wonderful. And yeah, and I'll post that to you. Great.
Lovely. Well, thank you all very much. And once again, that'll do it. So this is the conclusion of the webinar for today.
Thank you, everyone. To exit, you can click on the X in the upper right-hand corner, and that will close the window for you.